Hello, and welcome to Heritage, a series of programmes made up of interviews exploring the heritage of St Albans. I'm Tim Boson, and I'm in St Albans Civic Centre. Built in 1988 is the home to the offices of St Albans City and District Council, as well as a community hub, volunteer centre, police station and so on. Perhaps not well known is the basement here, which was built to withstand a nuclear test. Let's hope we don't have one today. My guest today is Councillor Anthony Rowlands. Hello, Anthony. Thanks so much for joining me.
Good morning, Tim, and I can assure you that I'm told no test will be taking place today.
Can you tell me a bit about yourself and how you are involved in understanding St Albans' heritage?
I was reflecting on that and why one person becomes interested in history and another one becomes interested in oceanography and another one becomes interested in nuclear science. And my interest throughout my life has been more towards the arts and the sciences. And I have no ready explanation for that. Though maybe it's slightly connected that I was brought up on the Isle of Wight, which leaves one with all sorts of legacies, some of which are more helpful than others. But the Isle of Wight is a very distinct place, and one perhaps is conscious of history down there. And my dear late mother owned effectively two hotels, one of which was called Brunswick, and the other one was called Blenheim. And if those aren't historic names, I don't know what are. And I suppose that links you saying, what in the hell would they call that? Well, that's all to do with the German connections to Osborne through Queen Victoria. So a sense of sort of history and place was always very strong. And I then went off to university and studied history, modern history, which means anything from about 500 onwards, and subsequently taught secondary school history for 20 years. And then before moving on, as it were, voluntarily to another career. But I did have spent half of my career teaching history, and that perhaps led me, once I became a member of the council, I think my first ever committee meeting was of the then entitled the Subcommittee for Heritage, Tourism and something else, which I've now forgotten. But I remember sitting there down in the old museum, what it was then, felt a very old museum, at Verulamium, discussing heritage, and that's long been one of my main interests on the council over the years. And I was in the fortunate position of being the what was then called Cabinet Member 4, now called Lead Councillor for Heritage, through a number of different periods, but particularly when we modernised the Verulamium Museum, and then after 2019 we tried to put into action the vision for the museum and gallery, and that's something I did between 2019 and 22, and since I resumed as Lead Councillor for Heritage since May of this year.
Right, good. So you're really at the cutting edge of St Albans and heritage. Can you tell me, what are the challenges in balancing preservation with modern development needs, particularly now that there's such an urgency for new housing?
The two need not be mutually exclusive. I mean, clearly a lot of new housing will take place on sites that are understandably and rightly flattened. A lot of new housing will take place on fields which have hitherto been farming or agricultural or whatever. Some new housing takes place in sites where part of the existing inherited development can and should be retained. So I would cite, albeit a small example but nevertheless an important one, the Sutton Road development, now called Hansel Gardens, which was a a factory and had many, many manifestations over about 100 years. It was a hosiery factory originally, a really very interesting part of the economy of St Albans East End, particularly with a large number of Jewish families working there. So when that was redeveloped, I mean, voluntarily, I don't think the developer needed any great sort of coercion. The facade has been retained, and behind it lie the new flats, and that strikes me as a way of combining both the old and the new. And there are other places where there's no crunch. St Albans signal box, for example, sits cheek by jowl with all the new gadgetry that comes with 21st century railways, and is a fantastic venue for people who want to understand how railways used to run. So I don't think there's much of a clash. And we've seen, I think probably when the history of the last 100 years is written, it will see the last quarter of a century or so as a time when we try to improve our city centre, which probably in quite a large chunk of the second half of the 20th century was not treated very well. If you look at some of the buildings that were put up then, we're sitting in the civic centre, and as you said, that was opened in 1988. I think it's actually rather good, and a damn sight better than a lot of other municipal buildings that litter comparable towns and cities.
Good, that's very encouraging. Now, I think I'm speaking to the right person, because when you were saying about your background in education, the next thought I had was really, how can the city's heritage be used to educate and inspire residents? I mean, especially amongst young people.
I think there's clearly one of the things that I find most congenial and interesting and fortifying is the level of interest in our heritage, and that manifests itself in all sorts of different ways, and we'll come on to that. And unsurprisingly, perhaps sort of an engagement with our local history, our immediate history, is something that people grow into as they grow older. I think it's a process that maybe when youngsters have engagements with other things as they grow up, that may not include in any very obvious way their local heritage that they've brought up in one place. The only place you know when you grow up is where you were. I know some people, lived in numerous places, but actually most people probably live in one community. And you only really, in part, only come to appreciate a place once you've seen others. And certainly I have, and tour of the country would be the wrong phrase, but I have over the years visited nearly every big town or city in England, and one appreciates more and more what we have here in St Albans. And I think as we look, and we were just talking about the embryonic ideas about Victoria Street, which, if you walk from the museum and gallery down to the station, the thought that there's potential here to make this altogether more interesting and worthy of the city is inescapable. Engaging young people, kind of the history curriculum, as we know, over donkey's years, has not really had much content that you would describe as local history. And it will be, I think, probably ambitious and go down rabbit holes if one tried to overegg the pudding. But having said that, we know, for example, that the Royal Amy Museum, I mean, part of the lifeblood of the Royal Amy Museum are the coaches that turn up and sit in Royal Amy car park and discharge scores of primary school children. One hopes that over the years, young people will have found some reason to have gone into the museum and gallery. And I think the figures are something like 26,000 people attended the recent exhibition on the Ladybird, History of the Ladybird books. Well, I'm pretty sure that quite a chunk of those people were under 16. And if we managed to put something on there, that then means that, children have, albeit sometimes escorted, not probably often escorted, but encouraged by their parents to go there, then that is a step forward. Because that certainly would not have happened 10 years ago to go into the old St Albans City Museum.
It's certainly a challenge. I mean, it has been said, of course, that the young live in the present, and it's only when you get older that you live in the past. But we're such a wonderful historic town. There's so many different aspects that can inspire young people. So I think what you're saying is to expose them and hope that certainly some of them will then pick up the mantle and love St Albans for its historic heritage.
And the Museum Service, I mean, to their immense credit, and I am very impressed with our Museum Service, never seek to omit any opportunity to encourage young people even to come in and do work experience at the museum, because that may trigger something. Because we know the Heritage Museum Service is not a narrow monolith. It actually avails of so many different angles of interest, and it may be they're interested in calligraphy, or it may be they're interested in archaeology or whatever. There's so many different components to what we're doing, and I do think it was the right thing to say that is a museum and gallery, because the sort of intertwining of so many things that are creative and artistic with our culture and our heritage is so close, and to acknowledge that and try and capitalize on that convinces me that we've got the right approach.
Linked to that challenge with young people, of course, is another challenge facing the country as a multicultural society that we are. How can the city's heritage be used to promote social inclusion and to celebrate diversity?
And that again was part of the vision for the museum and gallery, indeed for the museum service, because it's, I mean, it's always wrong to forget that we have two museums, and that there is a great deal to be learned from classical civilization and there, but what they did or didn't do. And of course, I think even recently they've been looking at classical times and disability, for example. But clearly, the main opportunity comes through the museum and gallery, and over the last two or three years, the museum has engaged with, as you've noted, we've had exhibitions about Jewish people who have come to live in St Albans and their experiences both before and after they arrived here. We've had some fantastic work done with, and this is an important point, isn't it? This is vital conjunction with the Afro-Caribbean community to celebrate their experiences, but also to allow an opportunity to remind ourselves how unwelcome they were made to feel by our predecessors here in St Albans, or rather some of our predecessors, and how one hopes that is a thing of the past. But we have to remind ourselves, and that is part of what history is for, And then I know I've within the last 6 months I've attended events at the Museum Gallery for the South Asian community, and equally, in a way, addressing another angle of inclusivity. We've had activities at the museum and gallery, and exhibitions about ME and chronic fatigue syndrome, where there is again a community who are not always recognised because the condition is hidden. And I know there are plans each year to all, and you can't deal with it. I mean, rightly, you can't try to deal with, if you try and deal with it all at the same time, then you miss it completely. You have to identify and move steadily forward. And they I think try and have one group that they're particularly trying to work with at any one time. So I think on that sort of inclusivity of our ethnic minorities and also groups within society, that actually we're showing how a museum and a gallery can really help inform and educate.
My next question is rather an obvious one in a way, but it might be quite useful to sort of spell it out. And it's really about the city's heritage and the part it can play in attracting tourism and economic development within the city.
Yes, and I first appeared elected to the council back in the 1980s, when there was certainly a residue of, well, we don't actually like tourists for all sorts of reasons. And that, I don't think St Albans was necessarily unique in that respect, but there was a hesitation and a lack of commitment. And I think overall, if you take the period since then, that we've very much moved forward, and there is a absolute recognition that to be a place that people want to visit is a good thing, and that's, it's not just the council, but clearly a lot of, private organisations that have things they want to show, have taken on board, and that also, and significantly extends to the cathedral, clearly have changed and moved forward, in my view, very, very effectively over the last 20 years or so. So there is, in terms of sort of more people visiting St Albans, The benefits are fairly obvious for business, because businesses can't necessarily rely only on local residents. And I think the other thing that I always used to bang on about was that those of us who are fortunate enough to live here, people like to come and visit us because they like to come to St Albans. And they say, well, we know that. I mean, in fact, and all the surveys about desirable places, they like coming here. And then we can then take them, and you've done that, I've done that many, many times, and one's proud to show it off. So there are direct benefits to local residents there. And I think the other thing is that it is that this sense of sort of distinctive place is really interesting and important, St Albans has so much going for it in terms of what we have to offer and how it's perceived. Now, we have to be very careful, we don't sort of stick ourselves up on a pedestal and think that we're somehow superior. We are the custodians for the past. And the past is something that is attractive to a lot of people in terms of trying to understand where we come from. That's a rather long way around saying, I think St Albans is one for me, coming from outside and never wanting to live in London, and but it, I regard myself as fortunate that I've basically divided my life between the Isle of Wight and St Albans.
It's a great historic city, isn't it? But actually, it leads me on quite interestingly, because we're talking about how attractive it is in terms of tourism, but how can the city plan for sustainability? I'm talking here about sustainable heritage management, really. We know we have financial issues, we have all sorts of problems. How can we actually maintain our heritage?
And assets are costly to maintain, as we know. I mean, the museum and gallery as a building is probably more costly per square foot than, you know, an office block. And is always going to be prone to needing things being done to it. I mean, we are about to spend, I think, just short of £1 million on maintenance work and repair work at the museum and gallery. Now, fortunately, because this is how the country works, or the local councils are generally skipped. There are other bodies that disperse money, and quite a chunk of that, it comes from the Arts Council. You create a virtuous circle by focusing on heritage and our prime assets, and then looking after them. And if I think local councils are seen to look after things and it has the capacity then to generate economic activity, then you are more likely to attract grants from outside, be that the Arts Council, quasi-governmental organisation, or other trusts, etc. But if you took the investment in the principal buildings, heritage buildings, that's museum, Verulam Museum, the old town hall, i.e. museum and gallery, etc. over the last 25 years, then a surprisingly large percentage of money has come in from outside, from foundations and trusts who have said, yes, you are doing what we value. And so you do create a virtuous circle. And that, though that doesn't breed complacency, it should give you, should embolden us to continue investing in our heritage. So for me, our museum service, which is not one we have to have, you're not statutorily required to have a museum service. So it's a discretionary service, therefore is, you know, more, has to be defended. For me, there is a defence, and it's a very positive one.
I mean, you and I know the challenges that the council face in all sorts of ways. For example, Sir Richard Lee's house, the old priory, which has been on the risk register for some time. And we've talked about, obviously, the Roman wall along the causeway. Yeah. There's a new issue coming up, which is going to be quite serious. And I'm deliberately using this interview as a chance to plug it in a way. And that is the mural, the Venus and Adonis mural, which is in what's the White Hart in on Hollowell Hill. It's actually in the shop part now where Pots of Art are.
Yes.
But that is deteriorating, and that's going to become an issue. Mm-hmm. I hope we can get the council involved in helping us to try and get that restored. Mm-hmm. But I know the challenges that the council face, and they are quite tremendous. And as you say, the way to try and deal with part of it is at least get outside funding.
Get outside funding, and I think it must be the case that if you're an external funder, I hope they would look and see that as long as District Council and the local community are fully supportive of and behind ensuring that when there are particular projects, that they will view them reasonably favourably.
In a way, that leads me to another question, which is really, when you're looking for funding, and I've been involved in this, as you know, looking for crowdfunding and funding from outside. How can we get our our colleagues, our citizens, to play a part in preserving and promoting the city's heritage? What way can we engage them?
Well, above and beyond what we've already talked about, which I suspect we have sort of provided a number of different sort of examples of where I think we do and have, as mayor last year, I sort of had interest in our heritage as my second theme. It wasn't second in importance, but it was just second in terms of sort of time that I devoted to it. Is that there are a really surprising number of organisations across the city and district, and obviously the district's important there, which have at their core promoting an interest in our history. And you'll be aware, because your involvement, that something like the Sahas actually now has upwards of 700 members. Well, that strikes me as a fairly remarkable number, which it will mean that people have, you know, proactively said we are interested in what that organisation does. There are also very active groups in terms of the tour guides, and I went on one of their tours and it was splendid. I mean, it was very well, the lady guide was very well informed, and it was very sort of delivered at the sort of suitable level that's going to inspire others and me to go on other walks and things like that. And we're really fortunate, for example, that the amount of volunteering that goes on, both in the museum service and, for example, the clock tower. So I think there is, for all the reasons we've discussed, an actual level of interest in our heritage is very high, and I think that's something, you know, the council I think reflects, and I think council should reflect what people are interested in. You know, if everybody in the city and district was interested in fly fishing, then we should do a lot towards fly fishing. But I suspect the answer is not many, because if they were, they'd probably go and live somewhere else. But our heritage is something that I think draws a lot of people to St Albans, and engages with a lot of people. So, and I always felt that the council has tried to be a council where, as it were, the council offices and council laws are reasonably close to the residents they are representing, and that's important.
That is, and I think you've mentioned there's so many. I'm impressed by how many voluntary bodies there are, St Albans, and with a huge amount of resource. I mean, the clock tower is a very good example. There's the clock tower staffed by volunteers regularly, and it's really, really helpful.
It would be impossible. Well, no, it wouldn't be impossible. But if you then turn and say, well, look, all those people are just going to go and retire and go and watch cricket or something like that. What would you do? Well, the answer is you probably would. The building would be closed, and because the council just does not have the resource, it would probably be open, what, you know, 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon. But if you can, if volunteers are disposed to help in the way they do, then the role of the council clearly is not absent, one of absence, but one of engagement and encouragement.
Yes, and you mentioned Sahas. Perhaps I should explain to the listeners who don't know what that organisation is. That's St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, a bit of a mouthful, and so it gets sometimes called the Ark and Arc. And then, of course, because I'm president of it, I must mention there's the Civic Society, there's Conservation 50, and a whole lot of other bodies, as well as the residents' associations who take an interest in the heritage. So I think we're very lucky, and we can be quite upbeat, I think, about the engagement of people, and that's a huge resource. I think we can probably, and being slightly political here, but I think we can probably work, some of these voluntary bodies can work closer with the council. We all live very busy lives, and it's all about communication, but that's a huge resource that the council can tap into, all those voluntary voluntary bodies with a lot of expertise, which is interesting. Anthony, we've covered quite a bit of ground. Are there any other thoughts that you would like to put into this broadcast?
I mean, the only thing I would say, and I said this fairly frequently, but it bears being repeated one further time, or fairly frequently when I was mayor, is really just to express a sort of acknowledgement and appreciation. And that there are scores, probably there's hundreds of people who are doing in all sorts of different ways things to support the overall goal of promoting an interest in our heritage, if you can summarise it like that. And so I think people need to be thanked. So thank you, because you've done quite a lot. And I think I love the blue plaques. I think they're just adding a small but significant additional level of interest to, you know, well, that's where Elsie Tongs lived. Well, I didn't know that. I happen to know the lady who lives there. I hadn't got the clue that this was the home of a very distinguished former local government officer who was clerk, something like that, chief executive of the council back in the days, and who wrote a very good short history of the city, and who deserves to be remembered. My thanks go out to everybody else, because if it was simply the council, then for certain sure our heritage would wither on a non-existing vine that might creep up the buildings that we're failing to protect.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the blue plaques, and I should tell listeners that Anthony, when he was mayor, came and installed several of them, so he's well known. And the blue plaques, yes, I mean, I've been fascinated by them and obviously been involved in instigating the blue plaques. You just learn so much. I've heard of names I'd never heard of before, and then they have fascinating histories. So they are part of St Albans heritage. Anyway, Anthony, thank you so much for agreeing to take part in this programme, and may I wish you all the best as the leader of heritage.
Lead councillor.
Oh, lead councillor. I was going to give you a portfolio, but you don't quite get a portfolio. You're lead councillor of heritage. Anthony Rowlands, thank you very much indeed.
Tim, thank you.
I was talking to councillor Anthony Rowlands, vice chair of the Public Realm Committee, and among other responsibilities, lead councillor for heritage. Can I thank the sponsors of these heritage programmes? St Albans Cathedral, St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, City and District of St Albans Tour Guides, and Conservation 50.